Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. For millions of college students, summer vacation is over and it's back to school. For many musicians, that means going to conservatories where the requisite frat parties and keggers will mix with auditions, competitions, and dreams of fame and fortune. But how realistic are those dreams? Will today's music students find jobs when they graduate? And which conservatories are most up to the task of training? Today, we have a number of guests to talk about this issue, and we'll also take some of your calls. We'll begin on the phone with Chris Paslis. He's a staff writer at the LA Times who recently wrote about the state of music education. He joins us from the LA Times newsroom. Chris, I want to begin our discussion the way you began your article with the following advisory, and I quote, "There are now too many musicians in San Francisco, more than enough to fill all the jobs. What we need is work, not musicians. Stay away from San Francisco. You will find it cheaper in the end." The notice signed by Order, Board of Directors, Local 6, San Francisco, 1898. Chris, have the prospects for musicians in California changed perceptibly since then?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, maybe they've even gotten worse. I'm glad you liked the quote, so did I.
1898. So a century-old problem continues to rear its head. Is it simply that there are more schools now than there were back in 1898?
Far more schools. I thought it might be interesting to report that the Los Angeles Philharmonic recently filled its position, an opening it had for their first chair, oboe. And they had 100 applicants for that position, which actually I expected them to have more. And out of that 100, they selected 6 to come and play with the orchestra, and only one of them got the job, of course. So that gives you some idea of the number of musicians that are out there applying for positions, and there are only about 20 full-time orchestras in the country. And when you think that a member of an orchestra might be there for several decades, you can see that those dreams are pretty hard to come true.
Yeah. So I mean, in the course of researching your article for the LA Times, did you find schools reacting to the reality of the situation? Are they teaching other skills beyond performing?
The schools say they are, and certainly the schools that give out BAs and MAs, which are different from the conservatories, which really focus on training professional musicians, try to give a broader education. But it's sort of the nature of the job that if someone wants to become a professional musician, they really have to focus very intensely on their instrument, and even if they are getting classes in other disciplines, their main focus is going to be on that instrument. And I'm not sure that music schools are, in fact, really preparing people very well for what happens when they get out there and find maybe 5-10 years later that they really can't make a living as a professional musician.
Well,
they have no other skills.
This would be a good time for me to bring in our next guest, Robert Sirota, who is a composer and conductor himself, but also president of the Manhattan School of Music. Bob's here in our Soundcheck studio. Bob, Chris Paslis just saying, 5-10 years down the line, many music school grads finding that, maybe the dream isn't about to come true for them. Do they have the wherewithal, the training in other disciplines to make it in the quote-unquote real world?
A complicated question. First of all, this article appears every couple of years somewhere, and this is a good version of it, don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying that this isn't a big problem and a big challenge, both for musicians and for music schools. But I think we're in a period that I would describe as the best of times and the worst of times for the serious or classical music profession. For that matter, for music in general, we have a segmented market. Mm-hmm. We have many, many more choices for people to do things. I think if you're going to use the old 20 orchestras as your only assessment, you really are in trouble. Students these days are much more worldly wise and cynical. In fact, I think almost to their detriment about all of this. And yet we still get people wanting to come and study at music schools. I think we have a responsibility now to really reimagine these schools. And I do think that is happening in a very serious way in major first-tier music schools. Whether we're reacting fast enough and whether we're responding well enough, I don't know. What I can tell you, for example, is that Manhattan School of Music has an orchestral training program which is quite unusual. It's called the Orchestra Performance Program. It's been going on for 15 years, and basically it teaches people to audition and to compete for orchestra, this very narrow band of things.
The thing Chris was just talking
that's
about,
right.
The 100
so,
people who go for the one
that's
job.
Right. And there are actually more orchestras in the United States than there ever have been by several orders of magnitude. Most of them are smaller, but they are very professional. And we have an 85% placement rate in those orchestras over the last 15 years, and orchestras all over the world, and not just the B and C orchestras, but the Metropolitan Opera and orchestras in Europe and the New York Philharmonic and the Philadelphia Orchestra, et cetera. So it's a mixed bag.
Right. So it raises the question, what kind of expectations, what kind of dreams and fantasies do these kids have when
Precisely.
They enter? You know, are they thinking, I want to play first chair flute for the New York Philharmonic? You know, I want to take over from a world-famous violinist when, you know, he or she leaves the stage? Or are they thinking, I would be happy just to have music as a part of my life, even if I'm living in, you know, a small town in the Carolinas playing in a seasonal orchestra.
Well, I would say there's a huge range of things in between those two extremes that you've just explained. And I think
the issue is
how do we do this? If you are competing to be the chief cardiac surgeon at a major hospital and you don't get that job and there are 100 applicants, and I assure you there will be 100 applicants, and if you get a surgery job in a small community hospital instead, have you failed would be my question.
Right. Chris, why do you think, I mean, again, you did a lot of research for this article for the LA Times. Why do you think there are so many schools nowadays if the job market hasn't really expanded to kind of fill? I'm getting a little disconnect between supply and demand here is basically what this boils down
to. There are a couple of things to say. First of all, of course there are many more orchestras than those top 20, but most of them are per-service orchestras. In other words, the musicians are paid for every performance and every rehearsal.
That is correct.
That does not necessarily give them a living wage in a big city. Almost all of those people, and there are many of those orchestras, have to do other things. Now, maybe they can teach. Maybe they can play in chamber groups. Maybe they can do other kinds of things to get, to beef up their income. But the fact that there are many orchestras and many musicians playing in orchestras doesn't mean that a musician is making a living by that. Now, as far as why are there more people? Well, you know, I think everybody who wants to study an instrument or voice should have that opportunity. And I think it's a wonderful thing that we have all this training. But I think most people start out thinking that they're going to make it, whether they become the top cardiac surgeon or not. I think they're aiming pretty high, and I think the problem is that the schools don't necessarily help them understand, although I think that, you know, people understand that there's a lot of competition, but, you know, when you have a dream and a love for an art, you know, you're going to try to pursue that as far as you can. And it may take, also if you're in your teens and early 20s, you have this high idealism and you don't have a realistic sense of what life is going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that gives you lots of supply.
There is lots of supply.
Yeah.
We're talking about music schools. Actually, the thing that occasioned our conversation with Chris Paslis of the LA Times and Robert Sirota of the Manhattan School of Music was the publication in U.S. News and World Report of its annual Best Colleges ranking, which included a special section on art schools. And also joining us on the phone today for Soundcheck this afternoon is Robert Morse, the Data Research Director at U.S. News and World Report. Bob, do you get a sense, I mean, you hear what we've been talking about so far, do you get a sense of what students are looking for in music schools that might sort of lead them to a conservatory as opposed to a traditional or conventional university?
Well, I think the students who are thinking about a conservatory aren't, you know, rookies. They're not starting off at, this isn't their first day playing their instrument or voice. They do know that if they go to a conservatory, they're going to be doing something, trying to take their skill and profession to another level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not sure how naive any particular student is or not. I mean, I think if you're going to be skilled enough to, they also know that applying to a conservatory is different than, you know, applying to a regular college. They're going to more than likely have to give an audition or give a performance. So they're not going to be judged typically on their test scores. So I think they have an awareness that they're going into a different type of education. It's hard to know what a 17 or 18-year-old or their parents think about what it's going to be like 4 or 5 years from now, what kind of job openings they're going to be. I'm not sure if they've extrapolated that far.
Well, maybe what we can do is actually we can give out the phone number and maybe some 17-year-olds or their parents can tell us what you think. What are your expectations for yourself or your kids as they look at college, look at music school, making the choice between those two sort of big choices, and then the specific choice of what school or what conservatory to go to? Our number is 212-264-7483. That's 212-264-7483. Bob Morse, at U.S. News and World Report, you rank Princeton, Harvard, and Yale as the top three universities. Your unranked music list includes Juilliard, MSM, the Manhattan School of Music, Curtis, Cleveland Institute, a number of others. Is the music list unranked because you don't feel like there's a way to determine, you know, a ranking the way you can for conventional universities?
Well, we certainly couldn't use the same system if we were ranking music programs as we could with the conventional. I mean, the admissions process is typically very different. The classes are taught generally different. There's a lot of one-on-one or very small tutoring or meeting with faculty. There's the use of part-time faculty, which at major universities sometimes is considered a negative. At conservatories, part-time faculty can mean meeting with, you know, being taught by people who are successful in the field in that community, sort of real live, you know, people who are part of an orchestra or conducting or really have big names in the field. So the education process is different. We just felt that we haven't come up with a way to do it. I mean, we could.
Well, it seems like you've made the right choice. I mean, in a certain way, you know, trying to quantify the arts is a difficult and impossible
right.
task. So why not make it an unranked list?
Right.
Robert Morse is the Data Research Director at U.S. News and World Report. Also on the phone with us is Chris Paslis of the L.A. Times. And in the studio, Robert Sirota from the MSM, the Manhattan School of Music. Bob, here in the studio, the thing that this conversation keeps reminding me of, you brought up the idea of the medical student who wants
yes.
to be the top heart surgeon. To me, the analogy is sports. You know, it's the kid who you know, comes from a small town in Nebraska and has a good arm and has always been told that he's going to be a great pro football quarterback when he grows up.
Right.
And then, you know, gets to the college level and reality begins to set in. And, you know, I mean, this is a story that plays out in every sport, in every community, where kids are told, you know, dream high, and
right.
and the amount of actual jobs available is minuscule compared to the quantity of kids trying to get there.
Well, let's extend that analogy for a minute. This same kid in Nebraska then realizes he doesn't quite have what it takes to be a major football star in the NFL. But he goes back to his hometown or to another town and becomes the coach for the high school team there, which wins the state championship.
Mm-hmm.
He teaches character. He teaches citizenship. Musicians do all of these things. Again, I'm going to talk about my school because that's what I know. At Manhattan School of Music, we have about 800 students. 175 of them last year were very involved in outreach programs in New York public schools, in nursing homes, in community centers, et cetera. It gave them performance experience. It gave them a sense of their role as a prophetic voice in the community. I think even in places that are very focused and very specialized, and I also, by the way, want to question the myth of the well-rounded education. This is a 40-year-old myth that nobody who goes to school anymore gets a well-rounded education, even if they go to Princeton. Ask Princeton graduates. They will tell you that. But certainly people should
Well, we've got the phone lines open. We'll see what happens.
People should be taking humanities. They should be taking the liberal arts. They should be learning about world history. They should be taking mathematics. I understand all of that. And musicians don't get as well-rounded as education as a liberal arts major. But I'd like to compare our employment satisfaction rates with people with Bachelor of Arts degrees.
Yeah.
I think that's a more legitimate response. We have profound challenges and problems in the music profession. Music schools need to become more responsive, and they need to understand these challenges. But I don't think we should be singled out.
Well, one of the challenges, in among many others, is a sort of still perceived color line, which some of the MSM students have crossed. The Imani Winds, group of African-American, Latin American young musicians who've carved out their own career for themselves since leaving the Manhattan School of Music and recently won an award for adventurous programming. This is some of their music. All right, the Imani Winds, they are a success story of the music education world, growing out of the Manhattan School of Music here in New York. Robert Sirota, the president of MSM, is with me in the studio. Chris Paslis of the LA Times and Robert Morse of U.S. News and World Report with us on the phone. And so are many listeners, and we're going to begin with Sam right here in New York. Sam, you've been listening to the conversation. What do you think of all this?
I'm listening to it. I don't think they're telling the truth.
Who isn't?
The truth is the people that are talking about colleges and conservatories and education in the market, they're so far. I'm in the percussion field. I'm 86 years old. I'm still teaching. I've taught some of the best people in this business without sounding like I'm promoting myself. I have 75 years in this business. I went to Manhattan School of Music in 1947 to 1951. I'm not trashing the school. There was nothing there to learn that was a practicality, giving me an idea on how I'm going to make a living. I got to pay for a telephone. I got to pay for rent. I got to pay if I have a wife and I got kids. They're not telling us how to make a living. You cannot learn how to play a professional instrument to make a living by going to any musicologist. I've said that for years,
mm-hmm.
and it's more and more true now than ever before. Yeah, you pay a big price because you've got to pay for the campuses, you've got to pay for the professors, you've got to pay for the upkeep of the school, but in the Manhattan School of Music, I don't know if there was 8 or 10 drum students, but they only used 4 in the orchestra. You can't make a living playing in a good orchestra. Mr. Freese, who was the teacher of Saul Goodman with the Philharmonic, said to me, there is no work for you in the classical field.
All right, well, that's that. They got it. 1947 was a long time ago. I want to throw this to Chris out in L.A. in the L.A. Times newsroom. Chris, in your article, Leon Botstein, the conductor and educator at Bard College, said, "We are producing too many musicians the wrong way, too many in a very old-fashioned, very out-of-date system of professional training." It sounds like that's what Sam was complaining about, but of course, he went to school in the late 40s. Do you think Leon Botstein's complaint still holds water today?
And
Sam's, for that matter.
Yeah, actually both. I think Sam's point is very good one. I've heard that complaint from other musicians, and not to trash any particular school. I mean, in a sense, it's maybe not their job, or it hasn't been until recently, to think about kind of vocational guidance. But there's a lot more to making a career than just learning to play an instrument. There's networking, there's marketing, there are all kinds of things. And I think what Professor Botstein is talking about is incorporating that kind of an approach to the music training so that people learned how to form their own groups, how to market themselves, like the Imani Winds.
Right.
They built on a particular strength. And I'm sure that the school helped them focus on that.
Bob Sirota?
I'm in complete agreement, both with Sam and with our colleague from the L.A. Times. I think we really need to, and we are. The one thing I would say is that this is not just lip service. We're really looking at a fresh approach to professional training. There's a lot of talk about training musician entrepreneurs, but it's true. And I think this generation, the 20 to 30-somethings in music, are much more clear-headed about what really needs to happen for them to pursue a multifaceted and satisfying career. Now, I'm not saying everybody.
Right.
But I am saying that we need to change or be left behind.
So are you preparing kids to consider careers in music publishing, music engineering?
Yes.
That sort of thing.
Well, let me give myself as an example. I am the least employable kind of musician. I'm a composer. And I learned by the seat of – I learned administration and fundraising and working with nonprofits and community action by the seat of my pants. But we now identify organizational talent in musicians very early. I'm a very active composer, but I have at least two jobs at any given time. And I think composers and musicians are kind of accustomed to this.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's been going on for centuries. Bach had a church job, and he worked in a school, and he composed, and he had 20 children, and he still wrote a cantata every week. So this has never been an easy living.
Right. Let's see if we can get another caller. Heather, here in Manhattan. Welcome to Soundcheck, Heather.
Hi.
Are you from one of the conservatories?
I am. I went to the Manhattan School of Music, graduated with my master's degree in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a couple of comments. Being I'm a singer, we haven't really, you've talked a lot about orchestral musicians and that sort of thing, but at Manhattan School of Music, there is a tremendous amount of singers that go to the school. And for me, I will forever be grateful to the connections, to the incredible staff that's at Manhattan School of Music that I made. I'm relatively very successful, and I am one of the few working singers that I know that came out of my class.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
was it a good thing for you? I guess is the bottom line.
In many ways, it was a good thing. I have very mixed feelings about my education at Manhattan School of Music. I got my undergraduate degree at St. Olaf College, and it was an incredible experience, and it was an incredible education as far as music education is concerned, be it theory, be it history, be it pedagogy, anything
right,
like
right.
That my education at St. Olaf gave me the foundation. My education at Manhattan School of Music was very different. Now, granted, I wasn't there as an undergrad, so I don't know exactly what the undergrad situation as far as humanities are concerned, and as far as abroad, I mean, I know
Heather, we're actually out of time here. Let me just what did you want, just in a nutshell, from MSM when you went in?
what I wanted from MSM was a reality check of what the real world was. And unfortunately, I didn't get that. And
okay.
I also feel that they take entirely too many singers that they know are never going to have careers to pay the bill.
All right. Well, at that, we'll have to leave it there. This is one of those conversations that's always going to raise more questions than it answers. But, you know, sometimes raising the questions is the important first step. We've been talking with Chris Paslis in the newsroom of the L.A. Times, who's written about the whole music school, music conservatory education situation in our country. Robert Morse, the data research director at U.S. News and World Report, which published its annual Best Colleges ranking with a special section on art schools. And with Robert Sirota, the president of the Manhattan School of Music, MSM, here in New York. And to the two Bobs and Chris, thank you all for joining us this afternoon. A fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And remember, you can always email us with your thoughts by sending us a note, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.